Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Okay, we're just going to cop to it. Let's bring Heather's mic. We're going to find Heather's mic here. I can't find the open to the show here. We're in the new studio. There's no organization in particular to what's on the computer here, and
it's hard to use.
Then Black Power Hour was before me, so I didn't have time to come into the studio because
and we were giving you threatening looks.
That's
too.
Right, they were.
Right.
Actually, if you get a chance, are you going to put that up on online on the podcast?
Yep.
I think some folks ought to listen to that. I was listening on the way in, and I thought you guys had a lot of really, really interesting things to say, and I think folks ought to pay attention to I don't know. I just found the conversation intriguing, Mr. Sanders. Do we have we're still looking for her mic.
Yeah, see, they changed it.
They changed it? Now, why did they change it?
I don't know.
I mean, we had it. You know, I come in once a week. And I'm still looking for the intro to my show. I can't find it. It's here someplace.
She's G.
Oh, boy. And he's looking for Heather's mic because she's in the other studio. She's not even in the room, so I can't even turn on her mic. So it's just Mike Novak today. All right. Oh, and I haven't given her this.
I'm going to give that to her when I leave out of here.
Well, she needs to know who's on the show, what phone numbers to call them. I'd have you. You should come in here, Heather. Come in here for a second, and we'll let him find that. And I'm still looking for...
We're both looking.
Yeah, we're just... So at any rate, on today's show, first of all, we're going to start off with let's get you on one of those mics.
Sky rockets in flight. Sorry.
I think that's the one. That you there, Heather?
Am I on?
Yeah, you're
there
on.
I am. Did you just really reference Afternoon Delight on a Sunday morning for Sirius? Did you?
You know, that's not very black. I'm sorry.
And you are.
That is like... Oh, my phone's ringing. Now, who's...
The consummate professional yet again.
You know what? That's my alarm clock. And I never, you know, if I don't have that on...
You're supposed to be on the air now.
Yeah. It's like, I wonder who's calling. Who's calling me at 8 o'clock?
I can't imagine anyone who doesn't know you that knows you're kind of busy at this time on a Sunday.
There are some people who have no clue.
Apparently.
So, and
so they changed the buttons on you boys?
And locked me out.
Did they lock you out of there?
Yes.
You mean so we don't have Heather's mic on from the student? So how are we going
to
do this?
I'm going to try it again.
Mm-hmm. It's always an adventure, isn't it?
It
I do
is.
Know that some of our other brokers came in and reassigned a lot of the buttons over the week, and that got remedied. Wasn't that an issue?
Which is why they probably locked it out.
I think so, because other people were going in and filling up all of the buttons that were saved for particular brokered shows, such as this one. And obviously, it works so well, it almost worked. It's working against
it's
them
working
now.
Against.
Exactly.
Right. This is amazing. I just went through the whole file here. I've got no show up in there. I don't see it. It's got to be here someplace, but...
Good planets.
They're
hard
to
find.
Something, tropical
lines.
Right.
Something.
Something cool planets. And
all right.
It's sad. I've heard that every Sunday morning for almost 3 years, and I don't know it.
This happens a lot.
Yes. Yeah, stuff happens. That's
all right.
Life.
All right. Well, I'm getting you this.
I have the saddest looking basil plant you ever saw in your life
yeah,
in the
she
kitchen
brought
right
in a
now.
Basil plant. And
I'm going to save it.
Yeah, with two leaves on it.
Three actual, like, you know, lush leaves. The other ones are kind of shriveled and dead.
And I said...
And I thought I just had to cut off the leaves, but per your advice, just chop it down.
Dear God!
Comedy of errors!
Dear Lord, don't call me!
Is that you again or your alarm?
It's me again. This is...
That was your snooze?
No, that's not my snooze. That's somebody calling me. I don't know why. I can't answer it.
I must admit, I do enjoy the new location. Instead of taking 45 minutes to get here, it took me 20.
Well, that's good for you.
Yeah.
It takes me an hour 20.
You live further away than I do.
I'm enjoy the new location. I don't enjoy anything in the building at the moment.
It's just bugs. They'll work the kinks out. Just have faith.
Yeah, when you come in once a week and...
yeah, a little frustrating. Just a little skosh frustrating there for you, Mr. Novak.
So, yeah, I'm terribly frustrated at the moment. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by the Care of Trees. Our business, their business,
is people and their love for trees.
And in the first hour today, we're going to talk to Cindy Baker, manager of horticultural services at the Chicago Botanic Garden. Talk about the crazy weather. It's crazy weather. And there was an article in the Trib the other day. Tim Johnson from Chicago Botanic Garden talked about how this. Oh, look at this. I found an open. What do you know? It's too late.
No, it's not.
It's not?
No, it's only 9:05.
You're right. So if we did this.
Better late than never.
Let's hear it.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos.
See, that's
tacos
old, too.
And
we're not outside the 53A bus stop, so ignore that part of it. Here we go.
Locally broadcast green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the man.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by the Care of Trees. Our business is people and their love for trees. He's the best thing to happen to the environment since the solar-powered hamster wheel. Great. Now he's putting hamsters out of business. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Does that mic work there, Mr. Sanders?
No, it doesn't.
It's not on at all. No, I go to the other one. Wow. So that mic doesn't work.
No, that was the one that Ernest James was on earlier.
As I was listening on the way, and I realized that you couldn't hear him.
I thought maybe it was just something internal.
No, it was.
Because I think Dick Kay was using that one yesterday.
Happened? Dick Kay broke it? Did he get too close?
Yes, I'm not
going to. No Dick Kay impersonations.
He makes everything better. What are you talking about?
I'm going to get in trouble if
yes,
you do
you
that.
Are. All right. Yes, you are.
So. And you can slide over to that one, Heather. You could,
but you found your opening.
Yeah.
It's the old one.
We can't. When will we have production facilities so I can do a new opening?
They're working on that. They are working on that. The production studio is in, but it doesn't necessarily communicate with itself the way it needs to. It's not necessarily completely mapped/webbed correctly to be 100% effective.
She's total.
That is some positive.
The glass is half full.
You're total corporate now, aren't you?
You're an apologist for the man. Yeah.
And I'm the only woman here. Go figure.
Yeah, it's coming together. It's coming together.
Yeah, it is coming together. And the people, the everyday ones that are, you know, waist deep wading through it, the ones working on getting that production studio working, they will get it done.
They will get it done, yeah.
It just, they have issues from above that are slowing them down.
Are you talking about God?
Sure.
Tim Tebow's causing trouble at the radio station?
I'm sorry, I laughed when he got knocked out last night.
Boom!
I was just like, I was not on the Tebow bandwagon, but I was conflicted because I hate Brady.
Yeah,
I'm just tired of Pretty Boy Brady. If they could have both lost, I would have been really happy.
Pretty Boy Brady's a Michigan boy.
Another reason not to like him.
You know that Jimmy Harbaugh from 49ers, Michigan boy.
That is true. And the Detroit Lions.
And yeah, the Niners, whoa.
Yeah, next year will be the NFC Championship game. Will be the Niners and your Detroit Lions will be in there.
You think so?
Yeah,
possible.
No, next year they'll do better. They'll do better.
I have personal issues with the Detroit Lions, so it's nothing about them as a franchise or a team. It's completely personal.
You just hate to see Mike Novak happy.
No, that's exactly. No. It's another Michigan boy. I don't want to see happy.
It's like my Sarah. I hate Sarah. She too is from Detroit.
And then yeah, and then the Red Wings winning yesterday did not overwhelm my disdain for Michigan sports. And again, it has nothing to do with Mr.
You know, Mark. I'm just sitting here and thinking, you know, the better teams win.
My Bears in the playoffs.
Teams
no.
Win.
No.
Yeah,
no.
All right, listen, let's get
have a great show.
I'm gonna try. Can we start over?
No.
All right, good. Let's get
sometimes
Cindy.
Sometimes you just skid in face first,
yeah,
you know?
No kidding.
That's how some of the greatest victories in sports were made.
Yeah, so. We're not talking sports here. We're talking horticulture. And Cindy Baker will be with us shortly in the second hour. Rick DeMaio, of course, is here today with DeMaio Weather see what the forecast is for the rest of the winter, what we've had of it so far. Second hour, Starved Rock. If you follow me on Facebook or Twitter, or if you've been paying attention in the news, there was a vote in the LaSalle County Board on Thursday about whether to allow an open pit sand mine to be constructed across the road from Starved Rock State Park, the eastern entrance of Starved Rock State Park. And the vote wasn't even close. And I'm for those people who are fans of Starved Rock, I don't mean that in a good way. Okay. And so we will talk to some of the folks involved in that. In fact, some folks who were here last week. We're going to have to get Mikey in here again to set up that this thing, too. Okay, great. So I can see who's on the line, but I assume I know who's on the line. You're typing into something there, Heather, and it's not showing up anywhere on my screen. So,
phone. She couldn't hear me when I answered the phone. Oh. I could hear her, but she couldn't hear me. So we're trying again.
This is really good. So anyway, John McKee, who's the president of Starved Rock Audubon, will be here. Rick Scott, one of the LaSalle County board members, will be on the show. Cindy Skrickrud, who's a clean water advocate from Illinois Sierra Club, will be with us as well. And then at the end of the show, I actually got a tweet from one of our listeners who said what we need to do is have a debate on the show featuring the three candidates for one seed Chicago, the three herbs. I was thinking, you know, that's not a bad idea. So maybe later in the show, folks.
Do herbs have mad debating skills?
I don't know. You know, I have no idea. So later in the show, we might have folks call in and as surrogates for the various herbs, because herbs can't speak for themselves.
No, they can't.
But their surrogates can.
I'm fighting for a basil, so hey, so why not?
So it's like super PAC money going to various herbs, and then, of course, unlimited funds can go to any of the herbs.
There's a joke there. There's a seed PAC joke there.
There is, seed PAC.
But I haven't had enough coffee yet.
Yeah,
hang on, it'll come
close.
To me.
if folks call later in the show at 773-763-9278, maybe we'll have that little debate here. Now, all I've got to do is... I'm looking at the phone, trying to figure. Line one, great. Now we hit this button. We hit this button. And Cindy Baker, are you with me?
I think you just hung up on her.
I just hit it once.
But she's gone.
Okay.
Sorry, Cindy.
I hit it once the way it was supposed to go. You just hit that button. You hit one, right?
We have gremlins. Don't you know this?
Okay. All right. We'll have her on a second. So yeah, later in the show. We may have.
We've got all this great stuff planned if we can just figure out how to make everything work.
Yeah, it's really good. You know, it worked better last week on the first day because then they came in and they switched everything around.
Yeah.
Here, you know?
Well, then the problem is something else small broke it somewhere else, and to fix that, it ended up trickle down effect.
Mr. Sanders, I'm going to need you in here. Thank you very much. And
it's like old times, though. People can hear me on the phone.
They can hear you on
the phone? Well, if you've got my mic on, they sure can.
Oh, yeah. No, I've got it on.
He hit the wrong button. Hold on one second.
No, I didn't hit the wrong button.
You so hit the wrong button. Hold on.
I so did not. All right. Let's make sure. Which button am I hitting here to put her on the air? The one or the one next to it?
The one should do it.
The number one.
That's the one I hit before. Okay. So we go there.
On air. Cindy?
I'm here.
Yay! Victory won.
That's Yay. What I
Small
hit
victories,
before.
Folks.
That is the button I hit before.
Sure. Did okay. you hit it once or did you hit it twice?
I hit it once.
Likely along story.
Maybe he hit it along with something else.
Maybe. And maybe, you know.
There's an herb joke there, but I haven't had my coffee yet.
Maybe the pint of bourbon I had on the way in.
I told you, no more crack for breakfast.
Right. Cindy Baker is manager of horticultural services at the Chicago Botanic Garden. I'm just going to breathe. I'm just going to breathe here. How are you, Cindy?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Don't ask. All right.
Okay. All right.
But how are our plants doing? It was a kind of a slap in the face on Thursday when we had snow, and then we followed it with cold. But, you know, if people ask me, my response basically, if people ask me and they say, well, what can I do? I say, I don't know. Look out the window and enjoy the snow. Enjoy the view. Because there's really not a whole lot you can do, is there, with plants that are outdoors?
No, it's pretty much a done deal. I think the slap in the face was mostly to us. We were so, you know, liking that fall weather that just extended into January that, I don't know, personally, I was beginning to think maybe spring was right around the corner, and then we got this snow. But the plants, they're probably pretty much doing okay.
And that includes... the ones that I think people are most concerned with are trees and shrubs that might have been having buds swell because they bloom in the spring, or their bulbs starting to come up. Why don't you address each of these?
Well, for things like trees and shrubs, it's true that some of the buds might have been starting to swell, but I don't think we were getting a lot of bud swell to the point where this cold would have hurt them very much. You know, it was coolish temperatures and the evenings were pretty cool, so the plants weren't like jolted into a fast bud swell. So I don't think the plants were quite as shocked about this as what we might think that they were. You might have seen a few things starting, but not too much. A few people did report that they were getting some bulbs coming up,
mm-hmm.
and actually some snowdrops were blooming in some areas, maybe a protected or warm, sunny area.
Really? The snow? Come on, that's just the middle of, not even the middle of January yet. Today's the middle of January.
Absolutely. So the bulbs that have like a continuous flowering, such as narcissus and things like that, those, if they started to come up a little bit, they're not going to be affected at all. Things like tulip, if they had started to come emerging from the ground, you might see some browning on the tips of the leaves and such,
mm-hmm.
but the buds weren't really up that far. Now, if it was those real early spring bulbs and they did bloom, they're not going to rebloom this spring, but it's not going to kill them. They're just going to, they've done their thing. They're one-time things. So we'll have to wait till, you know, spring of 2013 for those. So it's really not going to, you're not going to see the effects of this particular snow too much this spring.
Okay.
Or,
and
this one.
But like you said, if a bulb has bloomed and really, as you say, probably the only ones might be some snowdrops that,
yes.
Got all excited, you know, and her.
Like, yay, some warmth.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, but the your daffodils, your tulips, your even your crocuses and hyacinths, as you said, they might have started to send up some foliage. And when you say they might have some brown tips, that's just going to be the foliage. It's not going to be and there are folks who. I'm sad to say, there are folks who will freak out over that. Say, mm-hmm. well, they're not perfect.
Sure. They're not
and perfect. I say, get a, you know, if you've got a problem with that, go out there with your scissors in the spring and snip off all off the ends of those if that really drives you crazy.
You could do that, but, you know, I just kind of look at it. I'm not so perfect either. And my tulips, I'm just happy when they bloom. And really, it's all about the bloom. So, you know, we don't really need to worry too much about those, but. If you got to be a perfectionist, I suppose you can go out there and snip it off.
Oh, now, what about the plants that lasted long, you know, that really hadn't hit dormancy? I guess most of them have. It did. I mean, but as we got into January, there was so much warmth.
Mm-hmm.
is it possible that some plants really didn't quite hit dormancy? Does this affect them at all? Were they a little too tender to take this cold snap? And or is it kind of the opposite, where we had times of warmth and then times of cold, and they kind of gradually went into the dormancy instead of all at once? How does that work, and how does this cold affect them?
Well, they truly did have a long period of time after they dropped their leaves, and we did have many weeks of cold that was enough to send them into a dormancy. Now, if you had been out there maybe doing some pruning, you might have pruned a branch or some branches, and you might have had the sap run on the trees, and so some people might be alarmed that, oh my gosh, my tree is not dormant. But that's natural, that on warmer days the sap is going to flow a little bit, and the cooler days, it kind of draws all the energy back into the roots. So this is actually more normal for the trees. Our trees and shrubs in this area, they are accustomed to the warming and the freezing and thawing. You know, Chicago winters, it could be a warm day and then a really cold day and a warm day and a cold day. So the plants that are truly adapted to our area, those plants are going to be fine. They already knew winter was coming, so they were doing okay.
Great. What about when we get into spring? I know the thing that a lot of people are concerned with are plants that, like magnolias, where they'll have the buds swell and then you get hit with a cold. But as you told me before, that's usually more a problem with a late cold snap than an early one.
That's what I think. You might remember a few years ago that we had a nice spring, and then all of a sudden we had a really cold snap. And that was after the buds were very swollen. Some of the magnolias were already even blooming. So in that case, those swollen buds, they are really tender, and those swollen buds that are ready to flower, they are not tolerant of a real cold snap. So we lost lots of buds that year. So the late frost, the late cold, hard cold snap, those are going to be very damaging to those spring flowering buds. But it's not necessarily going to hurt the tree overall. You just won't have a great spring show that year.
Well, and people who grow those here in certain magnolias and certain other trees are pushing it in this climate.
Sure.
They want some things that are actually happier, a little farther south. And some years you get away with it, and some years you don't get away with it.
That's right. Some years, these things that are maybe a zone 6 or 5B, that they are going to, will have glorious spring displays. But that is very much weather-oriented. And if we get one of those cold snaps late in the spring, keep in mind, it's just going to hit the flower buds, and the chances of it causing any significant damage, even in the spring, is pretty mild.
But while we're on that subject, and you're talking about various zones, you've worked at the Chicago Botanic Garden for 24 years, and you're the manager of horticultural services. You follow a lot of plants there and seen how they've reacted over the years. What would be your observation regarding climate variability in our area? Do you feel like we are getting slightly warmer here, and have you noticed it? And which plants are the bellwether of that?
Well, gosh, I think that's a really hard question, because our winters are so variable that only the things that we're trying to, those marginal plants that really don't like it up here, those are the only ones that are really going to be affected in the long term. We have to keep in mind that this winter, even though it's probably the warmest in how many years? I don't know how far they are going back.
Well, I'll ask Rick DeMaio when he gets in here, our weather guy.
Weather guy. Yeah, I mean, but it has happened before. So in the long run, this climate change that people are talking about, I'm convinced that it's happening, but I'm not convinced that I'm seeing enough of it that it's really going to affect what plants we can grow in our gardens. So we, for example, we have a really nice bed of Vitex along our service road,
mm-hmm.
and those are notorious for not wanting to grow in this area, not doing well, and they're still going strong. And we've had some really cold winters in the last 10 years. But
well, that's interesting because I would have thought that somebody like you would have noticed. But if you're saying that really nothing now, and of course, you're not doing scientific studies on this. You're just caring for these plants.
We're just caring for the plants. True. Now, the other thing that is involved in what we're doing with our yards is that every yard has little microclimates. So you could have a plant that would be one person would say, you know, I just can't grow it anymore, but it's doing well in your yard. It could be because of soil. It could be getting some wind protection. Maybe you're watering it a little bit longer throughout the fall. So if we give, you know, some really good care, we're still able to grow these plants that are kind of on the fringes of our zone.
We're talking to Cindy Baker, who's the manager of horticultural services at the Chicago Botanic Garden. The upshot of the cold weather and the snow we had the other day and the ice is a different story, though. If you've got ice on a plant, especially a tree or a shrub, you really got to be really careful about that, don't you?
Sure. Ice damage can actually be quite devastating. It doesn't take much, you know, more than a half inch or an inch of ice, and you've got a lot of weight load on your branches. So if your tree has not had some good quality pruning, you've got some weak branches, you could actually get some branches breaking just because of the weight of the ice.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be very serious, not to mention, you know, what's underfoot. But on the branches, it can be quite a problem.
Well, folks come out and there's snow on the branches, and maybe they waited a day or two, and they think they're going to get rid of this. Now there's ice underneath, too, and then you start shaking the branch, and what's likely to happen?
You can actually break the branch. If it's already frozen and there's that layer of ice underneath the snow, you can actually cause more damage. So if you want to reduce the load, the weight load, when it first snows, that's the time to go out with a broom, kind of lightly push the branches, jiggle the branches, and get as much of the snow off as you can. But that's what you need to do during the snowstorm or immediately after.
Before I let you go, the other thing, I found this fascinating. If you drive up to the Chicago Botanic Garden and you're driving along I-94, there's this wall that sort of is a buffer between the highway and Chicago. But I find it interesting. Now, I understand why you guys are there. It's partly, you know, the freeway is a wonderful access for people to get to the Botanic Garden. Same thing with the Morton Arboretum out in Lyle. Freeway's right there, but that's a double-edged sword because you've got noise pollution, you've got salt spray, you've got traffic.
Occasionally have a car in the bushes.
Oh, dear.
So, we have deer, too. So, you know, we've got it's a tough world. That is a garden. Those plants out there, those are tough plants. And it's a tough spot to have a garden.
Yeah, right. What I was going to say is you've got the wall, but you've got plants on the outside of the wall, which,
sure,
you know, and there's the highway, then there's plants, and there's wall, and then there's the garden behind the wall. But those poor plants that are stuck out in front of the wall are the ones getting run over by cars and getting the salt spray. How do you deal with those?
Well, the first thing that I tell everyone, and the same for us, is that you have to pick plants that are appropriate for the site. And so when you look at that particular site, you're going to say high winds, open exposure, western exposure, and, of course, the salt spray. And then you pick plants that are going to be appropriate for those particular conditions. Then once you have the plants, and even though you pick the ones that are, you know, that fit all that criteria, you still have to care for them properly, prune them properly, and keep them in the best possible condition. That's the only way a plant can survive, you know, can really stick it out through those tough conditions. And because that garden is so huge, it's a mile and a quarter long altogether because it's kind of at an angle there, you really can't get out there and, you know, take care of each individual plant and maybe flush the soils or wash off the leaves. So you really do have to take care of it as a whole and take care of the whole area as best you can. Proper watering, proper plants, proper pruning.
Give me a sense of some of the plants that are out there that can withstand those conditions.
Well, one of my favorites are the hydrangeas. We have those are great plants, and
what kind of hydrangeas do you have?
Well, you know, the oakleaf hydrangeas, the shrubbier ones, you know, that have those really nice panicle that is so beautiful, that's used for dry flower arrangements.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of oaks out there, a lot of the ornamental grasses, you know, some of the miscanthus, the penicillins, those are great. Pines, some of the pines are pretty good. The spruce, we have some spruce sumac.
Now, I would think,
those
would be susceptible to the salt spray.
Everything is susceptible to the salt spray. Everything actually is. So in large amounts, nothing is going to be able to make it. So what we have to do sometimes in the springtime, if there's a lot of salt spray, we may actually have to go out and prune out some of the branches, because the ones that are facing the highway, we still lose some branches of that also. You know, it could be on any of the trees, deciduous or conifers. So, you know, it's a tough world out there. And it really is. You know, you think about the rose garden on the inside. It's very sheltered and such. And you go out to what we call the berm garden, and the wind and the noise and the salt spray, and, you know, it's on a slope also. Yeah, that's pretty tough out there.
Yeah.
So there's so many plants out there, and there's only one horticulturist taking care of the whole area, that you can't give it those individual plant attentions like we can in our yards.
So you're just doing the tough love for plants there.
We're doing the tough love for plants. And, you know, if we discover that this particular plant doesn't work here, and sometimes we'll come across things that, you know, say, oh, it's salt tolerant, or then we may have to change it out and change our design and pick something that's, try something different. That's one of the nice things about the garden, is we're constantly trying new plants. This doesn't work here. Let's get a different variety. So, you know, when you come there, you're going to be able to see so many different things. And if it's there, it's probably a success story. So.
I don't suppose that the transportation department helps you at all by going a little easier on the salt. That's an on-ramp there, so they probably can't do that.
Oh no, they can't. I mean, this is public safety.
Yeah.
You just can't.
Yeah, but they could use the beet juice, couldn't they? Do they ever use that stuff?
I don't, you know, honestly, I don't know, but I doubt it, because of the fact that those things are much more expensive than rock salt.
Well, in general, that's a really good point. For folks who want to use, and we talked a little bit about this on the show last week, and I talked about it with Ron Cowgill, the idea, the worst thing you can use is sodium chloride.
That's the worst thing for the plants, yes.
Yeah, worst thing for the plants. It's pretty bad for some surfaces, too. You know,
oh, sure.
It'll break up concrete.
Well, it's less corrosive to concrete than some of the other stuff, but it's very corrosive to metal.
Uh-huh.
Cars. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, so it depends on what you're trying to preserve. But yeah, because the other things are, you've got calcium.
Calcium chloride.
Chloride and magnesium chloride.
Mm-hmm.
And potassium chlorides.
Well, one thing to keep in mind when we're talking about salt damage to plants, we have the salt spray that gets on the leaves and the branches, but we also have the salt spray that eventually leaches into the soil, and that can cause you problems next spring and summer. You might not even really notice some salt damage on the leaves or the trunks or the twigs, but then all of a sudden you have plants crashing in the summer once it gets really warm, and that can actually be a result of the whatever salt, you know, ice protection that you were putting down.
Yeah, so the idea when you're using salt of any kind, use it sparingly.
Sparingly. Least amount possible.
Yeah. Shovel first. See what's left.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and sometimes you don't even have to use it. And that would be the best recourse, because once it gets in the soil, it's really hard to get out.
Very, very hard to get out, especially with our clay soils. This stuff doesn't leach out readily. And, you know, we think about, okay, the sodium is really bad for the plants, but the chlorine, the chlorides that are in these compounds, if they accumulate in the plant, they will be taken up into the leaves. And then when we get our first heat wave in the summertime, you're going to lose your leaves. And it could actually be quite devastating to the plant if it happens year after year after year.
Really good point. That's a really good point. Yeah. A lot of people, things go wrong with their plants, and they don't look back 6 months.
Right. 6 months, 9 months.
Nine months, a year. Absolutely. Sometimes if a drought, the previous year, right, and the plant's still suffering from it, yeah. It's plants are sometimes slow to react.
Right. Well, and some of these chemicals, you know, the chlorides are in the soil. They're taken up by the roots. You're not going to see it until they start leafing out in the spring. You might notice, oh, gosh, that branch is not really thriving as much as the others, but it seems to be okay. Heat wave comes along, and all of a sudden your leaves just kind of curl and wilt. And you might have to send your leaves into a lab, because it's pretty hard to diagnose. Be very careful if these things that melt the ice, they really don't do you any good unless they're in contact with the surface, the cement. So clear your snow first, and then put those products down very lightly.
There you go. That is Cindy Baker, Manager of Horticultural Services at the Chicago Botanic Garden. Thanks for being on the show. Appreciate it this morning.
You're welcome. You're very welcome. Good talking to you.
And have a great winter, and good luck with those plants.
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care.
Bye.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. You still with us, Heather?
I'm right here.
Okay.
I was just saying, if a plant, you know, certain things that, you know, can kill a plant go back 6-9 months. So does that mean I'm technically not responsible for said plant's death over the course of, well, my life?
Of course, you're responsible for what you did 6 months ago.
Damn.
Yeah. There you go.
What did I do months ago?
And that's the point. A lot of people don't remember.
Yeah. A lot of people. Most people.
Yeah, I guess. All right. Let's get Rick DeMaio on. We'll talk about this crazy weather. Have you ordered your seeds for 2012 yet? It's that time of year. And if you listen to this show at all recently, you know about a wonderful heirloom seed company with a beautiful catalog. I'm talking about the D. Landreth Seed Company. Established in 1784, Landreth is the oldest seed house in America. Its founders introduced the zinnia, the white potato, and many tomatoes into the United States. Today, their collection features more than 60 different heirloom herbs, more than 70 different heirloom tomatoes, more than 15 different heirloom seed potatoes, and more than 45 different beans, and that's just for starters. And I'm going to have to pick some because Heather gave me a certificate for Christmas, which I've still got... to investigate. And
you have endless possibilities. You can get seeds upon seeds upon seeds.
Well, and a lot of them are going to go into the community garden.
Well, I love that even more. It's just, that's an all-around good equation.
It works out very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm proud to say, by the way, D. Landreth Seed Company is now a sponsor, as you can tell, of the Mike Novak Show. If you're looking for a great bargain for only $5, $5, you can have the magnificent 2012 D. Landreth Seed Company catalog with more than 100 pages of seeds, roots, tubers, garden history, 19th and 20th century horticultural art, and 450 photographs. Get a catalog for yourself or a friend or both by logging on to landrethseeds.com. That's LANDRETHseeds.com or call 800-654-2407. 800-654-2407. D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784.
At Innovative Insulation Solutions, their mission is to deliver the highest performing foam insulation systems available on today's market with an incredible R value of up to 7 per inch. Their history of safe and effective application of these systems, coupled with total dedication to quality, consistently earns their customers' trust and satisfaction. They specialize in all types of foam insulation. Spray-applied close-cell and open-cell polyurethane foam insulation, closed-wall cavity injection, and foam-in-place masonry block insulation. Innovative Insulation Solutions is totally committed to anticipating, solving, and supporting all of your foam insulation needs. Call Innovative Insulation Solutions today at 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com. That's 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com.
Welcome to winter, finally. And when the snow is on the ground, it's a good time to be reading up on what you plan to do during the gardening season. You need the January-February issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, the annual annual planning issue. You'll see which new annuals Ball Horticultural Company in West Chicago thinks are the best of the best, considering they test an average of 3,000 varieties each year. You'll be getting a look at some pretty special plants. There's also an easy-to-read calendar that shows you when to plant, fertilize, and harvest vegetables, plus charts that will help you pick annuals and shrubs that are best for your gardening site, and what you need to know about keeping them healthy. Of course, there's my column on the inside back page. You can still have a successful 2012 even after reading that. Get a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine right now when it can do the most good. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. The Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Let us go to... I'm going to try to do this without hanging up on it.
That's a very nice slow groove into weather.
It is. It's that...
Marvin Gaye?
The Marvin Gaye.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you...
You can't miss. There's certain ones you just can't miss. He's one of them.
That's it. Let's go to line one. Rick DeMaio. How you doing, Rick?
Hello.
Morning, Rick.
Hello. Hello.
Don't do that to me.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
don't mess with me, pal.
I'm just you know, following the lead of my father when he doesn't want to talk to my mother when she calls from the road, and she's like, "Dear, have you taken the chicken out of the freezer yet?" Hello, hello.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. You're breaking up.
Ricky, throw it in the microwave real fast before mommy gets home.
Hey, you know, in terms of phones, my family worked this way. My dad just didn't answer the phone. That was very clear. Dad was not going to answer the phone.
To your mother, like, right away.
Yeah, if he had to, yeah, absolutely. If mom was outside, he'd pick it up and like hold the phone outside the door.
My dad was notorious for the one word answer.
Right.
Hey,
right,
Dad.
Right.
Hey.
Or Heather, my dad still answered the phone at home like he was at work. Just before he would pick up the phone, he would go. then he'd go, Bernie. And then my uncle, for the life, I don't know why he did this, he would call up and say, "Hi, this is John DeMaio. Is your father there?" I'm like, "Yeah, hi, Uncle John." But he would always announce himself as John DeMaio.
The original caller ID.
Yeah. Like star.
No, I've cleared my throat on the phone when someone's answered before. I thought I had one more ring. I never do it conscientiously, if you will, but like I've caught myself doing it, like, ooh, that was rude.
Right. Hey guys,
kind of a Harry Carey thing.
Isn't it amazing how snow completely transforms not only the landscape but everybody's mindset?
I lost my mind and became a raging idiot after someone sprayed me on the street with wet slush of snow the first night it snowed.
Oh.
I got completely hosed from my left side. I was cold and wet, and Vesuvius erupted 1/10 of the amount I did. I was ready to kill someone. And then, of course, I completely blamed the snow.
Well, yeah, I guess you were probably standing too close to the street. But
I was fishing for the scraper in the trunk of the car.
Oh, okay. So you have a reason for being close to the street. But isn't it amazing, guys, how... You know, we see the same sort of formula for TV news. You know, the snow prep, the reporter in the morning out at the Des Plaines Oasis, and then what are you going to do to handle the oncoming storm? And we're on storm watch, and now we're going to get up a half hour earlier, even though bringing you news at 4:30 isn't early enough. We're going to get it to you at 4 a.m. And then the spinning tire in the snow and people shoveling and the snow totals. It's almost kind of funny at times, I have to say.
It is, and what I noticed that we would have been through this a month and a half ago we had a normal winter.
Right.
But now we had to put up with it this week, that whole, oh, my God, Armageddon.
Oh, my God, it's snowing in January. Oh! thought that was what I was like. Everyone's like, it's snowing. I was like, no kidding.
It's just goofy.
It changes the way we do things. It really does. And, you know, even though we didn't have a bad, you know, morning rush hour and the afternoon wasn't too terrible, I mean, we ended up getting about, you know, 4 to 7 inches. Even though the original forecast may have been a little bit too low, then it was pushed up too high, then it kind of, you know, kind of mediumed out, so to say. It usually happens with systems like this, Mike, where you have a lot of different variables coming together over a long period of time, and, you know, forecaster anxiety comes into play. Then everybody says, well, you told me this, and when is it going to happen? And people are actually on edge for a while, you know, and then all of a sudden you wake up the next morning, you go, okay, yeah, we got like 6 inches, you know. And then what's nice about this snow is it kind of fell over a long period of time. So I don't know if you guys noticed this, but it covered almost everything.
Mm-hmm.
Every little bush and tree and plant.
And street sign and lamppost, everything.
It was kind of nice. So what I want people to do today and tomorrow, because tomorrow's a holiday, but tomorrow the temperatures may warm up a little bit too much to really enjoy it, but go out and take a walk through the forest preserve. You know, if you have cross-country skis, this is great. I went out cross-country skiing yesterday. I'm going to go again today. This is great snow, Mike and Heather, because it's very light, very fluffy, and we have a nice kind of icy, crusty, slushy, you know, compacted base. So this is good stuff, and this is actually really good for plants and flowers because it keeps the ground temperature from getting, you know, too cold.
Did you say crusty? Get the snow skis.
I have a question about temperature because I have a friend who's trying to build an ice rink in his backyard for his daughters, and he's been incredibly frustrated with the fluctuating temperatures.
This is a good week to do it. Even though we're going to warm up a little bit tomorrow, Heather, we'll go right back into the, you know, below freezing on Tuesday and stay there Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But unfortunately, this time next week, we're looking at readings in the low 40s on Saturday and probably close to 50 on Sunday.
Again, I knew it was going to come back.
Yeah, but you know what? The pattern is such that the storm track is coming straight out of the Pacific Northwest right into the upper Great Lakes. So if it goes south of us, we'll get these little clipper systems and get cold. And once the pattern kind of bends a little bit back north, we'll get warm again. So if your friend or anybody out there listening wants to, you know, get their outdoor rink, because I've had several of those questions posed to me before. It's decent weather for about 4 or 5 days, and then it kind of turns to slush.
Oh, wow.
I know, not the best answer that you want to hear, particularly this time of the year. But, you know, looking back nationally, this is the least amount of snow we've had on the ground, not only in Chicago, but nationally since back in 2006, when we had an incredibly mild January. But then we followed it up with the month of February 2006 was colder than it was in January by almost 10 degrees, and we had nearly 20 inches of snow that month. We still don't look at anything super-duper cold and super-duper snowy around here, but at least you can say it looks like January all of a sudden.
Oh, it sure does. It feels like it.
Yes.
It's about time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I wasn't complaining, though, when it was warm and there was no snow. It was much easier to commute to work, and I have to admit, it was a lot more convenient, even though the snow is pretty.
You know, it was interesting because last week I took advantage of it, and because this was my last week before I, you know, head into a full, you know, schedule of teaching. I actually jumped on my bike and rode it 3 days, 10 miles up and down the lakefront, and I'm riding around, and not only was I enjoying it, but there was a lot of other people out there, and on Thursday, this was last Monday before the snow hit. There was like everybody was out because they knew it was last Wednesday. Everybody was out because they knew it was going to get cold and they knew it was going to snow. And you can see them like, okay, I'm getting this done before the cold and snow come back. And it was almost having to pinch yourself. The fact that it was that nice in the middle of January, we hadn't had. And apparently, Mike, there were actually lines. There were actually periods of time where people had to wait to get on the golf course. Certain areas.
A buddy of mine yet said last week he was out, he played 18 holes of golf.
If I was a golfer, I'd do the same thing. And I know guys who love motorcycles, isn't that right, James Valentine, who are out riding extended.
Right. All right, but this is the funny part about my friend playing golf last week. He played 18 holes. They had a portable drill with them because they couldn't get the tees into the ground because it was frozen. So they were drilling into the ground and putting the tees in. That's just too funny.
Now that's when you not okay. Now if you get a divot in that condition, do you what? Screw it back into the ground or what? I'm kidding.
Know, can you have a divot when the ground is
exactly.
Cold? Probably not.
Just bend your what are they clubs?
Yeah, right. But it's kind of interesting. So yeah, I was I saw people golfing on Wayland Golf Course, and I just went out cross country skiing on Wayland Golf Course yesterday. So,
you know, do you do this just to make me look bad? Oh, I was on my cross country skis. Oh, I biked 40 miles yesterday.
No one knows
the snow.
You're not an outdoorsy type. They think you're all like with the plants and running through nature like a wild man.
Naked
or something.
Most of the time.
See,
you had to
go and paint that image, didn't you?
No, I've always been an avid cross country skier. If there's 4 inches of snow on the ground, I'm cross country skiing. It's, I think, the best winter sport out there. It really gets you. I think it gets your blood flowing.
It does. It's amazing sport.
Yeah, you're not alone, Rick. I saw a father teaching his son at one of the parks in my neighborhood yesterday out on the cross country skis, and I just remember going, "That's such a great idea."
Yeah. Although I don't know about how many kids are going to be cross country skiing in the next 10 or 15 years, because snowboarding is the sport of young people, and it's so fast and so much more exciting that...
Well, I don't know, because in a good blizzard, you can cross-country ski much easier to the 7-Eleven to get anything you might need than you can snowboard, because if you don't have downward momentum, you're not going anywhere.
Right. In some places in the United States, that is the preferable way.
I've seen it happen in here, Chicago.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely good stuff, but I have to get all this stuff done, Mike, before school starts, and if I don't do it today and don't do it tomorrow, then I'm toast for the next couple of months.
I got you there. Okay, hang on. Well, Rick is going to have our weather forecast. Let me take care of some biz, and we'll be back with Rick DeMaio weather in just a sec. Here's a tip from the care of trees. The snow we got this week was just a shot across the bow from Mother Nature. If you have mature trees in your yard, you might want to have the care of trees phone number handy. They can't restore power after a big storm, but they do have 24-hour emergency service, and they can take care of your damaged trees. Many people don't understand how dangerous it is to remove or prune storm-damaged trees yourself, especially if a tree falls on a car, other structures, power lines, or even other trees. As I've said before, when a tree falls on another tree out in the Pacific Northwest, they call that a widowmaker, and there's a reason for it. The Care of Trees offers 24-hour emergency service to assist in performing the job safely while minimizing further risk to your property. The Care of Trees shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of your life. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220, 847-394-4220, the Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
All right, we get back to Rick DeMaio, and we had snow this week, and you say we're still kind of on that westerly pattern coming off the Pacific Ocean. Is that right?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Mike, because going into the year, everybody was talking about how La Nina was going to give us, you know, a much worse winter, but essentially what's happened is La Nina has worked out. It's done its job, but what's called the Arctic Oscillation, that's the part of the North Atlantic into Northeast Canada that tends to become somewhat what we call blocked. And when you get this big bowling ball of warm air in the upper levels of the atmosphere across Greenland to eastern Canada, it tends to take the jet stream that comes in off the Pacific Ocean, which has been incredibly strong this year, and it forces it southward. And that's one of the reasons why we had, you know, three or four the past years. with a lot of snow here in the Midwest, but that hasn't happened this year. The Arctic Oscillation has actually been more positive, meaning that it's allowed the jet stream to come in off the Pacific Northwest and roll directly across the northern United States. It's been more so in the positive phase, meaning the warm phase, than it has been in the last 20 years. So until that changes, that's when the jet stream will begin to dip southward somewhat. And it looks like it's going to do that a little bit more as we head into the end of this week and also the end of next week. So in short, we'll see a lot of clouds today, even though it's somewhat sunny out now. There's a lot of high clouds still rolling in. So we'll call it mid-20s today. Then we get into the upper 30s tomorrow, a little bit of rain, a little bit of wet snow, but no big deal. And then a cold front shifts south, and then we'll go back into a colder pattern on Tuesday with maybe a couple of inches of snow by Tuesday afternoon. And I'll actually be doing the evening news, the afternoon evening news on Channel 2, Tuesday and also Wednesday, filling in for...
By the way, that's your two-minute warning.
My two-minute warning.
Yeah.
And my condolences out to Steve Baskerville. Steve lost his mother during Christmas week. She was 95, okay? So he had to deal with that. A week later, his aunt passed away. Now, his aunt lived with his mother. Obviously, they're sisters. His aunt, get this, Mike, was 101.
Oh, my goodness.
So Steve's had to bury his mother and then his aunt in a matter of 2 weeks, and he basically said his aunt kept looking around for her younger sister, and pretty much broke her heart. So I'll be filling in for Steve on Tuesday and Wednesday. Now we get into some snowy pattern around here for Thursday and Friday. Could see maybe 2 to 3 inches, but then we warm right back up Saturday and Sunday. So we're kind of on a little bit of a cold snow, mild roller coaster here. So I'm thinking for the rest of the month, the second half of the month of January, because we like to go long term here, I'm thinking temperatures near average, but snowfall, Mike, could actually be anywhere between about 4 and as much as 12 inches, depending on how that storm track goes through. So we may actually end up near normal snow for January, and probably near normal snow for February. Now, because we had such a mild December, we'll end up being below normal for the season. But the pattern definitely looks like it's going to start to get a little bit more snowier, but still nothing in the way of any those huge 10 to 20-inch snows coming our way. The pattern still hasn't gotten into that shape yet, as we call it.
So some snow, some warmth, a little bit of rain maybe tossed in there. And
right, but the good thing is there's nothing in the way of any severe Arctic cold. We don't see that coming at us. Though we'll get into the teens and, you know, single digits, but nothing in the way of any 15 to 20 below anytime.
Okay, great. That's Rick DeMaio. You can go to DeMaioWeather.com. Go to my website, MikeNovak.net. Thanks, man.
Okay.
Have a great week, and we'll see you on Channel 2.
Okay, see you on Tuesday, Wednesday. Bye.
All right, and hope you stick around for the second hour. We've got more talk on what's happening at Starved Rockaway. I hope you join us.
Well, I went to bed in Memphis, and I woke up in Hollywood. I got a quarter in my pocket, and I'd call you if I could, but I don't know why I gotta lie. I wanna rock and roll this party. I still wanna have some fun. I wanna leave you.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show has been brought to you by The Care of Trees, their business's people, and their love for trees. And now, Mr. Mike Novak. How was that?
That's pretty good.
Do you think anybody knew it was live, or you think anybody thought it was pre-recorded, or I'm just full of myself?
A little of everything
right
there.
Yeah. A little from column A, a little from column B.
Exactly.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
I got some work to do here after
the
show.
Hey, at least I didn't name a show after myself or anything.
Whoa!
Sorry, it was laying there. I couldn't resist it.
Whoa! We've been getting some interesting tweets today. Now, first of all, some of the folks are tweeting that the stream is off.
Yes.
That it's 2 minutes behind or something.
Is yes.
Is that still the case, folks on Twitter?
Well, I do believe so.
You are the folks who have been really...
they haven't brought in a computer to run the stream on its own. So right now it's supposedly just literally replaying everything that's on the AM. So it's probably on a delay because it's got a feed through.
Yeah. So sorry about that.
Yeah, that will be remedied soon again when the actual very large, very nice, very brand new computer comes in, and the stream will go back to being its luscious self again soon.
It's luscious self.
And streaming. Luscious and streaming self of progressiveness, radio goodness.
Progressiveness? Is that a word?
What is this positive attitude you have here?
Extra shot of espresso in my latte.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. And then some interesting tweets here while we're... let's see. In regard to the conversation with Cindy Baker from Chicago Botanic Garden, use sand instead of sodium chloride snow melt products, says... there's a retweeting that, and she's right. You know, it's interesting, though. Sand, it doesn't melt snow. It just gives you traction.
Mm-hmm. I've heard the same thing with dead Christmas trees, to take the pine needles and shake them over. That also kind of gives you traction.
And that certainly isn't going to cause any problems.
No, that's not going to hurt the environment.
Nope.
But, again, it won't melt the ice. It'll just give you traction where it is slippery. It won't solve, you know, what doesn't melt the ice like the other stuff.
And then Zan tweeted, just reminded by Mike now to order my seed potatoes from D. Landreth Seed before they sell out. And yeah, you know, I'm going to tell you, if I'm really happy to have D. Landreth's advertising on the show. I'm not going to tell you you should exclusively buy there, because there's a lot of great seed companies out there. If you want to get D. Landreth seeds, yeah, I say go for it, because they're one of the really great ones. And yes.
Does that happen, though, that like various, you know, seasonal seeds do sell out?
Yeah.
They run out of seeds?
Well, sure, because they're doing heirloom varieties. They can only grow so many, and they can only have so many seed packets, and then they do run out. So, but then what was funny...
For a gardening layman, though, what's the difference between an heirloom variety and a regular seed plant?
Well, an heirloom variety is often open-pollinated, and when we say open-pollinated, it means that you grow the potato, you can, or the seed, the flower, it produces its own seeds that come true to form. All right.
So it will regenerate like a regular seed
well,
does.
Well, like the flower that you
that hasn't been touched by.
That you've just grown. Then there are the varieties that are manipulated by various companies, and sometimes that's in a good way, because they create plants like, for instance, in terms of tomatoes, that are verticillium wilt resistant and resistant to other diseases.
Right.
And so it's not always a bad thing. You know, the argument's going to go on forever.
But the bad ones, again, those seeds end up not regenerating themselves. Like you have to buy more seeds.
You have to buy those seeds every year
if you
want
that. See, that's the BS
plant.
One.
Well, but, you know, part of the problem is that some of the tomatoes that and other plants... vegetables that have grown for years are susceptible to certain diseases. The question is, if can you produce those without those diseases? And other varieties, you know, different colors, different textures.
Is it still a tomato, though? It's if its genes have been spliced and it's been changed around.
Now we're getting into a different thing.
Yeah.
This is not gene splicing we're talking
about.
Well,
yeah, okay, yeah.
All right? This is
GMO.
Hybridizing. Is a different thing altogether. See, we don't want to confuse the two, because gene splicing is where, you know, you're shooting genes from a foreign plant or sometimes animal into this the genetics of this plant. Hybridizing is you grow one variety here and you grow another variety and you cross pollinate and then you see what the offspring looks like, and maybe that doesn't work, so you try it again and again until you get the color.
But it's a
natural
occurrence.
But well, it's not natural either.
It
could be natural, but
in theory.
But it's natural in the sense that you're not shooting genes into it, but it's not natural in the fact that you're growing these varieties and you might be actually pollinating them yourselves, painting with a brush so that the one plant will accept the pollen from the other, and then you wait to see how the seeds, you know, what kind of a growth you get and how the seeds react, and do they come true to form. I mean, it's a long process.
If I ever grow a sunflower, I just see a big sunflower named Dolly, you know, like the sheep that they made. They cloned the sheep and they named her Dolly. I see like the sunflower of the same, you know, we're going to clone a sunflower, blah, blah, blah. But it's fascinating, obviously. And then there is so much to it that, you know, it's easy to get confused, especially for, again, a layman like me. But
so
you just wonder, what are the best seeds, you know, to use?
And that's a really good point, because there are the people who say the only good seed is an open pollinated seed, and then there will be other people say, yeah, but if you want to grow a plant and not be dealing with certain problems that are going to crop up in the garden, perhaps you need a hybridized seed of an F1 variety, they would call it. And which you have to buy each year, and some people swear by that. And it depends on the plant, and it depends on the person, and that's why this argument will go on for a long, long time.
And that's
time.
Why you have this show.
That's why we have the show, yes. So we can have it. So after Zan wrote about the potatoes, my skinny gardener.
Yeah, I saw that.
She said, growing potatoes is dead to me, dead.
Hey, my family left Ireland because there weren't enough potatoes. So and if the potatoes go, I go.
And the other thing I talked about was the possibility we might do some debating later in this hour about One Seed Chicago and get surrogates on to argue for their favorite herb, because I haven't made my mind.
Are you still looking
yet.
To be bribed?
I'm still looking to be bribed.
Okay.
All right.
If people want to call for any reason, our phone number here is 773-763-WCPT, which is 9278. And you can tweet us at Mike Now, and we're on Facebook and all that yummy stuff.
And
but
then,
yeah.
And then I had another tweet said, talking about D-Landers, just saw, wait for it, lemon cucumber. Anyone try growing this? And there are tweets that, yes, they're going to try it.
Is that just a yellow cucumber?
I think it must have a slightly lemony flavor, but I'm not sure.
See, I used my Land Earth catalog to do learning games with my kids. We would go through the gorgeous photographs and be like, how many radishes? How many of the vegetables are red? Because they're all preschool and younger. And we used the photographs in the catalog, and I had them count all the purple ones. I had them count all the leafy ones, which one was a plant, which one was a fruit. It was actually quite fun. And we did it for about 30, 45 minutes.
And then J.A. Frederf tweeted in response to the people listening on the stream. He says, everyone, don't be afraid of the radio. Radio is good. Oh, we need
radio. Radio is good.
Radio.
Radio.
Do we have a way of getting... internet stuff on
I honestly
on the show?
Don't know.
You know what? We would have to do that.
Yeah.
I think I could do it through here.
I'll come over and play over your shoulder there.
Oh, well, I don't know where that comes up on here, so I'm not sure. So
okay.
It probably isn't worth it.
Yeah. Do we have, Radio by Elvis Costello? That'll work.
I was thinking of Muppets myself.
Well, you can't go wrong there. Or Caravan by Van Morrison. That's one of my favorite radio songs.
And then
there's
a question. Please tell us how we can, as gardeners, cope with the adversity of 73-degree weather in January. Happy New Year, Mike. Mud from California. Well, I don't live in California.
It's 70. Well, what zone would California be?
Well, various, but more like 7, 8, 9, 10.
That's much different from us.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And finally...
I'd be jealous of sun in 73 right now. Like,
a tweet about the cucumber was at the... hold on. Boy, it's just so much.
About the lemon cucumber?
Yeah, there we go. Which is to say it's a cucumber... It's yellow and looks like a lemon, so I guess it doesn't.
But it is a cucumber.
Because I've never grown it, so I'm not.
That'd be pretty in a salad, though.
Yeah,
and delicious.
And another tweet: hybridizing is fine. Proprietary genetic copywriting is the biggest problem, and that's kind of what we're talking about. It's like, owning our food outright. This is why open pollinated is such a good idea to preserve, because nobody owns that. We all own that,
That was just what the Dear Earth gave us.
You get the seed, you grow the plant, you can save the seed. Next year you can plant it over and over and over again. And that's one of the great things about that. All right, we need to get our guests on for the 10 o'clock hour, and Heather will take care of that. And as a matter of fact, let me quickly, before we do that, take care of some business. We were just talking about it a second ago. If you're a gardener, this is the time of year that you want a seed or flower catalog in your hand as you map out the coming growing season. And if it's a great and special heirloom plant that you want, look no further than the D. Landreth Seed Company. At 227 years old, they have not only been observers of our country's great history, they have made it with their introduction to America of some of our most beloved flowers and vegetables. It doesn't matter what kind of gardener you are, there's something for you. Landreth has specialized collections for gardeners with limited space, gardeners wishing to celebrate their African-American heritage, and gardeners wishing to introduce children to the fine art and craft of gardening. That's just part of the more than 900 heirloom seed varieties, roots, onions, shallots, garlic sets, tubers, heirloom flower bulbs, and more. It's just $5. That's the catalog. Just $5. And that includes shipping and handling. Log on to LandrethSeeds.com. Find them on Facebook or call 800-654-2407. 800-654-2407. In fact, call right now. We'll get that bump right at, you know, during the Mike Novak show. 800-654-2407. D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784. And tell them that Mike sent you.
At Innovative Insulation Solutions, their mission is to deliver the highest performing foam insulation systems available on today's market with an incredible R value of up to 7 per inch. Their history of safe and effective application of these systems, coupled with total dedication to quality, consistently earns their customers' trust and satisfaction. They specialize in all types of foam insulation. Spray-applied close-cell and open-cell polyurethane foam insulation, closed-wall cavity injection, and foam-in-place masonry block insulation. Innovative Insulation Solutions is totally committed to anticipating, solving, and supporting all of your foam insulation needs. Call Innovative Insulation Solutions today at 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com. That's 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com.
Here comes the sun, here comes the sun, and I say, it's all right.
Of course, that's our buddy, Chuck Lavelle, who we love on the Mike Novak Show.
We do love Chuck Lavelle.
Because he played for Heather.
He did. I have a video of it. I sat inches from him, and he sang me a whole song.
Cool. Did you just type those up on there?
I attempted to. I can't get the mouse to actually lock in on the screen where we want it to type.
Well, then hand me that little sheet of paper.
Old school. Paper.
where you scratch the names of the people
yep.
who
line
are
one,
on.
Line two, line three, your guests, sir.
All right. And we're going to see if we can bring them on without hanging
incident.
Up.
Incident?
Yeah. Gee. Okay. Counting down. We'll see how this works.
We got this.
Let's go to line one. And bring in John McKee, who's president of the Starved Rock Audubon. He's a member of the Starved Rock Foundation, was on the show last week. How you doing, John?
I'm doing all right, Mike. How are you this morning?
I'm getting better.
Attaboy.
With every second. I'm going to start with you because I'm also going to have a couple other people on the line. But folks who listen to the show know that last Thursday, there was a vote. And it was at the LaSalle County Board about whether to approve an open pit sand mine owned by Mississippi Sand LLC on a parcel of land that is now farmland and has not been rezoned, but just given a special use permit. We've been talking about this for a month on this program. Tell me a little bit about how the meeting went. What happened there?
Well, needless to say, the meeting did not go well for us, who were trying to keep this mine from going in next to Starved Rock. Excuse me. There was a very, very large crowd attended. It was 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Thursday afternoon.
And in the middle of a snowstorm, right?
Exactly, yeah. It was not a good day. Our first occurrence of winter down here. Union members had many, many people standing out in front with signs saying local jobs for local people and exerting their influence. The meeting was, first of all, there were three people allowed to speak to the county board. Their position is that we all had our chance to say our piece at the zoning board hearings that preceded this county board hearing. So they allowed three speakers. One of them was the first one was the lawyer that the opposition had hired to represent their position. Some of the landowners were actually the ones that hired the guy, the adjacent landowners. The guy that I guess is going to be running the mine, the representative of Mississippi Sand, got up and made his pitch. They were each given 5 minutes.
You're talking about Tony Giordano?
Tony Giordano got up and made his pitch, summarized what a good neighbor he's going to be. And then the lawyer for the current landowner, who, of course, is going to get very wealthy from the sale of this land to the sand company, got up and explained how and why this was the best thing for the county to do from the point of view of the landowner. After that, there was a whole lot of discussion by the board, a lot of amendments that were addressed, some of them shot down, some of them not shot down, most of which were fairly minor, the ones that were passed. They did mention that they had received a letter from the Lieutenant Governor's office asking for a 30-day delay on the vote so that the Lieutenant Governor's staff could look further into the issue as it related to the Illinois Rivers Coordinating Council, which the Lieutenant Governor oversees. The board voted that down. And eventually the vote was held, and it was 20-6 in favor of allowing the zoning permit and allowing the mine to go on. So that was the end of that.
I'll tell you what. Let's at this point bring in one of the council, or rather the board members, and that's Rick Scott. Rick, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Good morning. Thank you so much for being on the show today. I've got lots of questions for you. You heard what John McKee, how he described the meeting. Is there any other way that you would characterize it that might be a little different or give us more insight?
No, I think he was pretty accurate in how the meeting went. For many, many years, the rules of our board has been that only two or possibly three people could speak at the beginning of any board meeting, and that is basically the decision of the board chairman, and he held to that. I know I had talked to him previously as well about maybe opening it up to at least allow the owners of the property abutting the mining area to talk as well, but his decision was that he would allow the people that talked to talk. So that's where we're at.
Well, I'm glad you explained that, because there was concern about whether only three people were allowed to speak. And if you look at who they were, it was in favor of the people who were in favor of the mine.
I agree.
And one who spoke against it. So it was two to one in that regard. At least there was some rule that they were following on the board. You were the one, I understand, who introduced the motion to delay the vote.
Yes, I did.
And why was that?
Many reasons. Number one, I felt that the opposition had not had time to get enough information to present at the zoning board meeting. Granted, they can't bring anything new in, but maybe they would have time to look at and do some extra research on what was presented. The second reason was that Lieutenant Governor Sheila Simon had made a request to all board members to table the issue for at least 1 month so that her office had time to review the proceedings of the zoning board meeting and also what was going on in the area.
I'm kind of curious about that. Do you think that the board considered her request at all seriously? I mean, obviously it was voted down.
Yeah.
Why do you think that was?
I think that in talking to several board members, they had already made up their mind. And no matter what was found, if we had tabled it and it would have come back in another month, I think probably a majority of the vote would have been the same way.
That's Rick Scott, who's a LaSalle County board member. Also on the line, John McKee, president, Starved Rock Audubon. I want to bring in one more person, and that is Cindy Skruckrud, who is a clean water advocate for the Illinois Sierra Club. Hi, Cindy. How are you doing this morning?
I'm fine, Mike. Good to talk to you this morning.
And, Cindy, of course, you were also at the board meeting.
Yeah, and as you've heard from John and Rick, you know, I was very disappointed that the county board, you know, really limited their discussion to minor issues, and there was no discussion of impacts on Starved Rock State Park, even after we, you know, supplied over 6,000 comments that folks have from around the state, and many were from, I looked through the list, many people from LaSalle County themselves who weighed in with the county board and really concerned about this decision.
I have to ask Rick Scott there, since you're a board member, were you aware of these comments? Were they presented to the board as a whole?
They were not presented to the board as a whole. Was I aware of the fact that 6,000 signatures were on a form? Yes, I was. But that was not presented out to the individual, at least it wasn't to me, to the individual board members.
Because
I didn't know about it, but I haven't seen anything.
The question it raises to me, Cindy, is here you are, Illinois Sierra Club that does a petition, and you say you're going to present these things to the board, and the board doesn't get it. So where's the breakdown in that process?
Well, I think if this had been like other county boards throughout the state, where there would have been more people allowed to speak, then we would have been able to present them, you know, to the whole county board at their meeting. Because we knew only three people were going to be able to speak, we'd sent a letter to every individual county board member telling them that we had these signatures, and then we sent them to the county board office. But, yeah, with the limited public comment allowed at LaSalle County board meetings, that certainly didn't give us an opportunity to present them to the full board.
Uh-huh.
Mike, can I interrupt?
Yeah, go ahead, John.
A little bit? Early on in the process, those of us in opposition were told we had to send letters to each of the individual county board members if we wanted to write letters. That's 29 letters that we had to post to reach them all. I contacted the chairman's office, Jerry Hicks's office, to see if there was a way a letter could be addressed to him or to the general address of the board, and with a comment on it, please distribute this to the whole board, and would it then happen? And the secretary, to whom I talked, I assume it was a secretary, some person in his office, told me it is up to the county board chairman, Mr. Hicks, to determine which pieces of information he receives will be distributed on to the entire board. So he has complete control over the redistribution of stuff that comes in general like that. Apparently he did not decide to redistribute this petition.
One of the questions in this matter seems to be whether or not this is going to be harmful to Starved Rock. First, I'll ask Rick, and then I'd like John and Cindy to comment. Do you think the case has been made that this will not have a significant impact on Starved Rock State Park?
No. In fact, I was extremely upset with the presentation of the mining company's environmental study. And that's one of the reasons that I wanted to table it, is because I was still trying to find out the effects that it would have on the area. By the company's own admission, by the time they got back to the salt marshes, as far as the mining goes, they would not have to do anything to the property until they got to the salt marshes. But if the salt marshes were still there, then they would have to move those salt marshes. But by their own admission, they would not be there by the time they got there, because they would have drained them into the pit itself, which I found extremely upsetting.
That's a really good point. It's like, we're not going to touch, don't worry, we're not going to touch the salt marshes. Right. However, by the time they're done, the salt marshes won't even exist when they get to that land. Very interesting.
By their own admission, their hydrologist basically made that statement.
Hmm.
I also felt that a complete environmental study was extremely incomplete. And also their traffic study was absolutely absurd.
Well, I understand that one of the key debate points at the board meeting was how much traffic was going to go through the towns there and in the area. And from what I understand, and you can correct me if I'm characterizing this improperly, the company made no guarantees. They said basically, well, we're going to have as many trucks go through as we need to have go through.
They basically stated that there will be 220 truckloads of sand per day traveling down Illinois Route 71 for approximately 3 miles. Most of them will go to an ADM, a grain elevator, where they will dump into a barge. But some of those trucks will be coming through Ottawa as well. And, the city of Ottawa requested that we limit truck traffic through the city. And I found very upsetting the fact that Mr. Giordano came back and tried to renegotiate that issue with the board prior to the vote.
At that board meeting or before the board meeting?
At our board meeting.
So basically he was standing there trying to renegotiate knowing that the board vote was going to be held immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Did he get his way?
He did kind of, and in a way he didn't. I believe we left the initial stipulation that 22 truckloads of sand through the city of Ottawa, but a caveat was put on that to say that he could go to the city of Ottawa and request additional truckloads of sand traveling through the city. The city is the one that initially came to us and made reference to the fact they only wanted no more than 22 truckloads of sand coming through the city per day, basically because of the traffic congestion it would cause. So
through the city of Ottawa, you're saying, right through the heart of Ottawa?
That's correct. They'll go right down through the main area of the city.
John, what kind of effect is this going to have on that area to have these trucks?
Let me make a couple of comments first. Rick, I don't want to be nitpicky, but it's not 220 truckloads of sand. It's 110 truckloads of sand,
but 200...
and 110 return trips. Those trucks will, of course, not be loaded with sand, so that's a minor detail there. The trucks going through Ottawa are going to be a factor. Downtown traffic in Ottawa, particularly during the so-called rush hours, as we have them out here, can be pretty hectic. We've got railroads crossing through town, so there's a lot of traffic considerations. They're going to have to come in on Route 71 on the south side of the river. They're going to have to go over the bridge and right through town and then out the west side.
I'm sorry. That's my fault. Go ahead.
Okay.
Continue.
Okay. One of the things that really kind of stunned me throughout the board meeting was that while three speakers were allowed before the considerations, questions would come up from the board members, and they were addressed to Mr. Giordano, who would get up to answer the question and then stand there and continue to discuss the whole issue with the board. And as Rick said, to even renegotiate one of the caveats that had been put on by the zoning board. So he basically was up there lobbying throughout the discussion, whereas no one else had that opportunity. So I thought that was a rather unfair situation. And I must say, in all cynicism, I don't think it would have made any difference if we were able to speak for 10 hours.
Mm-hmm.
The deal was cooked before the board meeting even convened.
I would like to either John or Cindy, have you guys seen the studies, the impact studies, and are they public knowledge? Can anybody take a look at them?
I have seen that part of the proposal from the sand company. I assume they're public knowledge if you can get your hands on them. They distributed very few copies of it. Rick, did you get a complete copy of their proposal before the zoning board hearing?
I did not. The only time that I heard anything was during the 14 hours of testimony that I was at. No, I was rather upset with that, and my feelings are is that's a real issue and a major problem. Anybody that has opposition should have had a copy to that.
Wait a second. Now we're getting to the realm of the absurd. You're saying that if you were at the zoning hearing meeting, you heard testimony, but you didn't necessarily get a copy of it, nor did opponents of this where they could study it.
The opponents, I believe, got a booklet approximately 1 week or a week and a half prior to the zoning board meeting, which I found very unacceptable.
Rick,
I may be wrong, but that's what I understood.
Well, I can tell you my personal experience. The lawyer that was hired by the landowners got, after working at it, got a complete book.
Okay.
He then made copies of the issues. I went into his office and looked at the book, and I said, well, here's the things that are of particular concern to me and that I might be able to address in some way or another. And he made copies of those particular sections of the book for me. Mm-hmm. I assume he did some of that for other people also. I don't know for sure. But that's the only information I have is what he copied for me.
Right.
At his own expense.
Yeah, and my understanding is he received that booklet approximately a week to a week and a half prior to the zoning board meeting.
That is correct.
And the point you're making is that a week and a half is not a long time.
It's not anywhere near the amount of time. If you look at the fact that the mining company had a year to develop this material, then we ought to be able to give the opposition at least 3 or 4 months after receiving that manual time to rebut it.
Mm-hmm. By the way, the book is a 4-inch loose leaf binder.
Right.
So there is much information in it.
Right. On the phone, I have John McKee, who is a president of the Starved Rock Audubon, Rick Scott, LaSalle County board member, Cindy Scruckrude, clean water advocate, Illinois Sierra Club. Cindy, I want to go to you. Did your organization have any of this information, as far as you know?
No, we hadn't gotten copies of all the detailed information. We have bits and pieces, but, you know, I think, again, this just raises the issue of there wasn't time for everyone to do the kind of review that needed to be done of this proposal.
I really would like to, boy, you know, I could spend a couple hours on this because one of the things that I talked to a number of people who were at the board meeting, and the characterization of the board meeting, you know, was tense, all right, and it was almost as if it was unions versus environmentalists, and I hate that characterization because it's simplistic, and not all the jobs are going to be union jobs, from what I understand. Rick, is that the case?
My understanding is the majority of the jobs will be union jobs.
Okay.
It's my understanding Mr. Giordano, who came before our what they call the Tri-County union group, and basically made a statement that except for a couple leadership positions, all the jobs at the mine would be local union jobs, and that any work to be done in building them, the buildings at the mine would also incorporate local union positions. I did hear that from union business agents either that day or the day before.
But it's not just environmentalists versus union. It's people who own land there, who are dealing, trying to figure out. Well, and that's something you told me, Rick, that it's folks whose property is going to be adjacent to or near this construction, and what do they do?
I have the same question. I'm extremely upset. One of my main reasons for opposing this was the fact that the property owners did not have say in this at all. One person becomes a millionaire, and the rest have to put up with a 20 to 30 foot a wall in their backyards. And on the other side of that wall is going to be a 24-hour mine. What's wrong with this? And not only that, but they did not have time to ramp up an opposition towards that. Mm-hmm. And I find that very upsetting.
And so now it's a done deal, and at least in as far as the board is concerned, which means that it's on to Plan B, C, D, and E, which probably involves the Illinois Department of Natural Resources because they have to approve of this, correct?
That's correct. They have the permitting process at this point in time.
Does the EPA get involved at all?
Pardon me?
EPA, do they get involved?
I'm not 100% sure. I know that just the permitting process goes through IDNR at this point in time, whether the EPA gets involved down the road because of the they plan on pumping water out of the pits and into a creek, which will initially flow into the Illinois River. I'm not sure. I would assume that there might be a minor role by the EPA.
John, am I hearing you sighing over there on that line?
No, I wasn't sighing, just breathing heavily, I guess. I'd gotten up for a minute and sat back down. And
okay, I wasn't sure whether you had a comment.
Well, I have been sitting here thinking I never answered your previous question about the impact on Starved Rock. We got off on tangential issues, and I don't know if you want to go back and address that a little bit
Of course, I think we need to before we figure out what next steps are. What are we telling these agencies like the EPA and DNR and the Lieutenant Governor's Office and the Governor's Office and Senator Durbin, who I've been told should probably get involved in this? What do we tell them about the impact on Starved Rock?
One of the difficulties that we're faced with in this is that the impacts on Starved Rock are definitely going to be there in the aesthetic sense, but that's not a compelling issue, unfortunately, when it comes up against dollars and cents. The other impacts may occur. We can't quantify. We can't guarantee. And, of course, the sand company guaranteed there wouldn't be impacts, but they can't guarantee anything either. There's a whole lot of speculation on this. But they had paid experts to get up and testify on their speculations, where we were just the little folks talking about ours. There's going to be noise. There's going to be dust. There's going to be dynamiting. There's going to be traffic. There's going to be all kinds of things on the most scenic section of highway in LaSalle County, the approach to Starved Rock through Ottawa, that is, very scenic and very, very important to the tourism of this area. There's going to have impacts. We can't say it's going to reduce the visitation by X percentage or anything like that. You just can't quantify those things. So it makes our case one of, I feel, kind of logic and common sense rather than dollars and cents or percentages or anything like that. And I don't feel that logic and common sense have had a whole lot of sway in this whole debate.
This is Cindy. I agree. I think I just was really surprised at the LaSalle County Board meeting that there wasn't any discussion about weighing these, 39 jobs at this sand mine versus all the value that Starved Rock, with as a one of the biggest tourist draws in the state of Illinois, brings to the county. And I, kind of just then going back on the talking about, will they need a permit from the Illinois EPA? My understanding is yes, that they're going to be discharging water from the mine, and so they will need a permit from the Illinois EPA to be able to do that. So, our hopes are that the impacts on Starved Rock are going to be more thoroughly scrutinized by Illinois DNR and Illinois EPA than most of the county board members in LaSalle County did.
Have you heard anything from the Lieutenant Governor's office?
Yeah, I checked in with them yesterday, and they, too, are, you know, continuing to, you know, they got materials late in the game, too. They're going through and looking at those materials and, you know, looking at the other hurdles that, this mine will need to cross.
And it's hard to characterize it any other way, but it sounds like the lieutenant governor got dissed by the LaSalle County Board. And she found out late, and she got in the game late. A lot of, you know, that's the other thing. So much of this was late. Lieutenant Governor got involved late. You know, I was moaning and griping about the local media in Chicago. Sun-Times and Tribs got on board like the day before the board meeting. Nice job, guys. Glad you were there. It's just everything has been so last second, but this seems like it's kind of the way these MOs go in this kind of a situation.
And not to mention the fact that it was all introduced just before the holidays,
right.
Which you know, makes it, interferes with everybody's ability to focus on it and do a last minute, organized opposition. So yeah, they planned a good campaign, the sand company.
Well, it worked pretty well so far.
They slanted it well. Actually, I think one of their biggest, strongest moves was making their deal with the union.
Yeah.
And that to me is an interesting situation. 3 days before this county board meeting, there was another 520-acre sand mine approved by the village of Utica. They annexed the land and approved the mine. 520 acres as opposed to our 300 acres.
Mm-hmm.
That mine was promising 70 jobs, local jobs. And I was at the last five-hour meeting where that was approved. And by the way, it was approved over a unanimous recommendation that it not be approved by the village zoning board.
Wait. So if the village zoning board, which I thought was where the people, the zoning boards usually are the ones that have the say in this, because what I was told about LaSalle County was that, well, the zoning board said it was okay, so we're going to vote for it because the zoning board has approved it. How is it different in Utica with the city zoning board?
All, as far as I know, the zoning boards are strictly recommendations and can be overruled and have been overruled by our county board.
But that, Rick, Rick, go ahead.
Can I? This is the difference between the zoning board and the county or city government. Zoning boards act like the court system. In other words, they're like the circuit court. All parts of information are presented on both sides at the zoning board, and they make a decision. The county board, as well as the city of Utica, then has final say, and they're more like the appellate court system. No further information can be brought up other than what was brought up at the zoning board meetings. But yet, the county board and the city of Utica also have final say on that, based on the facts that presented by the zoning board. And if the county board or Utica would so desire, they can change that at that point in time. And that's what happened with the county. The county went along with the zoning board, whereby Utica did not.
But to finish my thank you, Rick. That's a good clarification. Your analogy to the court system works pretty well for me. But anyway, the Utica quarry, that 5-hour meeting, not one person was there lobbying for those jobs. Not one person stood up and said, we, the laborers of LaSalle County, need that job. There was not one person outside holding a sign saying local jobs for local residents. It is my understanding, and I may be wrong on this, so this is strictly hearsay, is that that company is non-union. And therefore, the union's position is, if it isn't union jobs, nuts to them. So those 70 jobs don't count. The 39 jobs in this quarry do count.
And yet, it got passed anyway.
Yeah, it got passed anyway.
Okay.
But Mississippi Sand made their deal with the union, so they got the union backing here.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because they thought it was going to be a harder sell.
Maybe.
All right, that's John McKee, who is president of Star of Rock Audubon. I'm going to let you go because I've got Daphne Mitchell on the line from the Illinois River Coordinating Council, and Rick Scott, I'm going to let you go, and Cindy as well, and I thank you all. This is not the end of this, obviously, as it wends its way through the various agencies and politicians' office. We will keep track of this, and I want you guys to stay in touch.
Okay, Mike. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. You guys have a good day now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let them go, and I want to do this so I don't hang up on anybody. And I want to bring in Daphne Mitchell. Daphne, you with me?
I am. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Before we let this go, and I've got just a couple of minutes here, and you're talking about a meeting that the Illinois River Coordinating Council is going to have on February 6th.
Yes, the first quarter meeting for the Illinois River Coordinating Council is February 6th, which is a Monday, 2012, at the IDNR, Illinois Department of Natural Resources, in the Lakeview Rooms in Springfield at 1:30 p.m. So I would encourage people to write to the Lieutenant Governor's office, show up. There's always public comment period, unlike the LaSalle County Board, which limits the Illinois River Coordinating Council with the Lieutenant Governor at the head, always allows public comment. You know, I would urge people to be prepared. Just a few things on the Lieutenant Governor's office. We feel that the elephant wasn't in the room. The Lieutenant Governor's office, Chief of Staff, and some other staff were planning on coming to the meeting this past Thursday, but were advised because of the bad weather in the Springfield area and coming north not to leave. So I agree with you. I feel the Lieutenant Governor's office was dissed. If you read the Lieutenant Governor's letter to the county board, and by the way, she mailed an individual letter to each board member, not just to Chairman Hicks. But they really had to jump through hoops to get information. And we had apprised them of the situation before the holidays. And then, of course, the holidays came up, and the Lieutenant Governor, I believe, was out of the country for at least several weeks, if not more. So, you know, even though people had notified, it wasn't until an impassioned plea from some of us who are citizen members to the Lieutenant Governor's office. I mean, they really tried to get information. They did get it, but it took a lot of hoops to jump through to get the information they needed from the county board. And then they said, you know, we need time to review this. I believe also the U.S. EPA will be involved. I've asked D.K. Herner, the chief of staff of the Lieutenant Governor's office, what is the next process besides the DNR? And my big question is, the Department of Natural Resources has the Bureau of Mines, which has to give a permit, but it also is the owner of Starved Rock State Park and represents landowners and all of us in Illinois. So that's my question. How will the DNR work in two different roles?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And actually, I'm so glad you said that, because I meant to bring it up during the discussion with the other folks I had on, because John McKee has mentioned this before. He was quoted in an article just the other day saying he's disturbed by the DNR silence on this issue. There's been nothing from the DNR. And as you point out, they have dual roles and sometimes conflicting roles, which is they manage the mines in the state, but they also manage the natural areas in the state. And I will just make an observation. When you go to the DNR website, and I went to the DNR website just yesterday to look it over, you see the pictures of eagles flying and trees and all the stuff, the hunters and all the ways that they protect the land. You don't see any sand mines on there, and yet this is part of what they do. So the idea that they haven't spoken up for Starved Rock, that Starved Rock hasn't had a voice from the people who care for it in the state, is disturbing.
Well, and I agree. Governor Quinn in the past has been very, very supportive of Starved Rock, helped preserve Plum Island as the home of the eagles. This is just a very short distance away from where the eagles roost. The eagles come all the way into Ottawa, where we live on the south side. The eagles fly from between here and Starved Rock. I can't imagine that the sound of blasting and dust in the air and disturbing a very pristine area is going to help. The other issue, Mike, is that everybody, all of your listeners, have to write and call our senators, our congressmen, and state officials. And that's what I've encouraged everyone here to do. I've contacted Senator Durbin's office, and his policy person I talked to said, oh, we thought it was a local matter. And I said, a local matter? Starved Rock isn't a local matter.
You know what? I'll stop you right there. They're being disingenuous, yeah. and they really should get over it and get past that, okay? Durbin's office should understand that this is a state matter and that it affects millions, over 2 million people who come each year to Starved Rock. So for them to say that it's a local matter is completely disingenuous, and it's time to get with the program.
I agree, and I thank you for your willingness to talk to all of us and bring this to light, and hopefully your audience will respond, because that's the only way it works. Like those 6,000 signatures, unfortunately, apparently the county board chairman decided not to share them, but that's what happens. The phone calls to the offices, the letters to the offices from individuals, because if it's just a few of us that speak up, then, you know, they say, oh, well, again, environmentalists. Yes, I'm an environmentalist, but I'm a citizen. So I'm glad you brought that point up. This isn't just pitting unions against environmentalists. It's pitting local citizens against local citizens, and some of us even union families like we are.
As you mentioned, it's kind of a civil war in some families right now.
It is, or it's that some of us, you know, how you're a union member and you're also an environmentalist and say, let's take time to look at this, because it shouldn't be any job at any cost. It should be good jobs that don't hurt other people and the environment. That's how I feel. It's, you know, we hear this all the time about jobs. And yes, we want jobs, but we want well-paying jobs and safe jobs. Mm-hmm. As we know, there have been many people who've made money. We had it right here in our own county with Radium City. The girls who worked there years and years, in the beginning of the 20th century, were told that the radium would make their cheeks pink. And, you know, they needed the jobs. So we've been fighting, you know, corporate people that come in, and that company, Radium Dial, was from New York. This guy is not from the area, Giordano. So, you know, it's time that we stand up for ourselves and really the local area and know what we have here. It's our heritage.
And on that note, I have to let you go. I'm out of time. But thank you so much, Daphne, and we'll continue to follow this.
Thank you so much, too, Mike.
All right. Bye-bye. Take care. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. We didn't get a lot of snow this week, but it could happen at any time during the winter. Do you know what to do to protect your trees and shrubs? When removing snow, we talked about this earlier, try to gently brush it off. Don't shake the branches as that may cause them to break. This is especially true for evergreens, which can collect excessive amounts of snow. If the snow is frozen on the branch and will not brush off easily, it's best to let it melt naturally to avoid damage to the tree or shrub. If you know that snow is coming, you think that a plant might have trouble, relatively small trees can be wrapped together or the leaders tied with strips of carpet, strong cloth, or nylon stockings, pantyhose, an arborist's best friend.
Or a good old pantyhose.
You gotta love pantyhose. That's true. Don't forget to remove those ties in the spring. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545. Or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, you just won me over, Mr. Novak.
Okay, good. I know you're...
I'm a Beatles fool, and this is the most beautiful song ever written.
It's a wonderful song. And there was a big controversy lately about the religion part of it that somebody re-recorded and said...
Oh, I know.
No. John didn't have that in mind, really.
No, he did not.
All right, we didn't have time today for the debate, but you know what? Maybe we should do this next week.
I think so.
Okay, I want folks to tweet me this week, write me on Facebook. I'll post it and send me emails. Should we have the debate among the three herbs on this show? And I want surrogates and fans of each of them to call in.
I'm curious about recipes, ways to use the herbs, why they should win, how they've earned their distinction, you know?
Okay. That's what we will try to do next week. So until then, I guess what we say is go green or...
go home.
And we will see you. I guess we got news coming up here at the top of the hour. Stick around. Oop, and we got a beep.